Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to Uxin's quarterly investor briefing. Joining us today from Uxin are Mr. Lance Gokongwei, President and Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Michael Rivanna, Vice President for Corporate Planning and Investor Relations. Uxin will give you a brief company presentation on the results. At the end of the presentation, there will be a question and answer session. I will now hand over to Mr. Michael Rivanna. Thank you.
Hi, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Lance will be joining us in 15 minutes, but we decided to already proceed with the briefing. Okay. Today I will be presenting the unaudited first quarter results of URC for fiscal year 2014. On to page slide number four. Okay. Sales remained buoyant for the first quarter of fiscal year 2014. Total net sales grew 13% versus same period last year from 20.1 billion to 22.7 billion, driven by record sales from BCF Philippines, which grew at 28% for the first quarter. In terms of profitability, Q1 EBIT ended at 3.3 billion, which is up 42% versus same period last year, with margins at 14.7% or 300 basis points above prior year. Branded Foods Group contributed significantly to the increase of operating income due to lower input prices and additional scale. On core earnings, we ended at 3.4 billion, which is up 31% versus same period last year. The company registered net finance revenue of 36 million this year versus 195 million prior year, as we have liquidated most of our bond and equity holdings in January of 2013. Lastly, first quarter net income closed at 2.9 billion, which is up 26%. Growth was slower than operating income as we book lower market valuation gains and lower net finance revenue due to the previous reason I stated. On the next page, which is slide five, we will now tweak our reporting prospectively and break the business into two divisions, mainly branded consumer foods, which we will call BCF, and non-branded consumer foods, or this is the agro commodity division of URC. So the diagram shows you basically how we plan to break down the results moving forward. So we start with the branded foods business on slide six. Total BCF sales for Q1 ended at 18.8 billion, which is a 20% growth versus same period last year. Growth was driven by the branded food operations in the Philippines at 28%, China and Hong Kong growing by 24%, and the recovery in Thailand, which is up 11%. EBIT margins ended by higher by 287 basis points at 13.7% on a blended basis due to lower input costs and additional scale, which led to an absolute EBIT of 2.6 billion, a 52% growth versus same period last year. In line with our thrust to be a strong ASEAN snack foods and beverage player, with brands Jack and Jill, C2, and Great Taste, and fortify our distribution capabilities across our geographic platform, we recently reorganized our branded foods business. We appointed one managing director to head both Philippines and international. We have also started initiatives on regional alignment in operations, procurement, and supply chain. With this, we aim to have alignment in terms of strategy and more flexibility in our operations as we build new capabilities to further strengthen our manufacturing and distribution across the ASEAN. On slide seven, sales growth for BCF Philippines further accelerated in the first quarter of 2014. Q1 sales registered at 12.7 billion, a 28% increase, with a growth coming from snack foods and beverage. 24% out of the 28% volume. Beverage continued to be the main driver, which grew at 44%, backed by our powdered beverage business, which still posed significant growth at 60%, mainly coming from coffee, we continue to grab market share from competition with latest exit reading as of December 2013 for total coffee at 25.7%, higher by 100 basis points versus the September 2013 reading. Ready-to-drink beverages also grew double digits at plus 13%, with contribution coming from RTDP, juice, and water. Snack foods also showed strong revenue growth of 20%, as salty snacks category grew by 19%. The growth has accelerated from a 9 to 10% in full year 2013, while bakery is up 27% and confectionery by 14%. Snacks category growth was driven by the strong performance of our organic brands in corn, healthy, fabricated, and natural potato. We continue to improve on our trade presence and shelf expansion and launch new and innovative products in the market. Okay. Aside from the solid sales figures, EBIT margins expanded further to a record high of 15.5%, 347 basis points higher versus same period last year. Absolute EBIT outpaced sales in terms of growth with a 65% year-on-year improvement. Prices for some key inputs remained low, such as cocoa powder, while the rest are close to 2013 levels, like coffee beans. Okay, on slide 8 for the international business, Q1 for BCF International was up 9% in peso terms, but in terms of dollars, this is up 3%. The peso has devaluated an average of 6% if you look at if you compare it to the same period last year. Our Thailand business grew 4% in dollar terms and 11% in peso terms. It grew, it's slightly recovering despite the weak macro environment. Sales for biscuits and wafers increased versus same period last year due to launch of new products, which are showing signs of traction. These are the Fan O2 Pack, Fan O Crunchy, Tivoli Twin Jumbo, and our Lokan wafers. On Vietnam, sales was slightly flattish because we experienced weakness in beverages despite the good sales coming from snack foods. The weather resulted in lower demand for ready-to-drink products, mainly tea, but we expect recovery as the summer months approach. We are also in the process of building our third factory in central Vietnam to further serve the requirements in the region. Indonesia sales declined by 8% in dollar terms because we stopped selling Situ, but our snacks and chocolates categories are still growing. Okay, for the information of everyone, our beverage business in Indonesia contributes 20% of sales. Okay, China and Hong Kong was slightly up versus last year due to higher seasonal sales for cereals and oats. China continued to augment coffee and creamer capacity for the Philippines and operated at positive EBIT in the first quarter. Okay. On slide 9, on the non-branded consumer foods business, for commodity foods, sales for sugar business declined as sugarcane production was affected by the unusually wet weather season, which affected cane supply for the period, as well as some operational breakdown we encountered in one of our big mills. Despite this, we expect an extended milling season, which will result to better cane supply in the coming months. Profitability, on the other hand, was maintained despite lower sales volume due to higher combined sales prices for both raw and refined sugar. On the other hand, flour sales increased by 7% due to higher volumes. Absolute EBIT increased mainly due to lower wheat prices versus same period last year. For our agro-industrial business, our farms sales increased by 11% due to higher volumes and higher average selling prices versus last year. For EBIT, Q1 figure was was significantly up versus last year. This includes a revaluation gain of $21 million on our revaluation on our biological assets. Q1 sales and EBIT for our feeds business declined by 7 and 34% respectively as we face issues in sales and distribution for this segment of the business. Okay, on the balance sheet, it continues to be healthy. We have managed to generate an EBITDA of $4.2 billion, a 33% increase over same period last year. We continue to remain in a net cash position of $9.9 billion in Q1, from 8.1 billion as of end 2013. Major cash inflows would be 5.7 billion earnings from operations. On the other hand, we spent 2.4 billion in capex for the previous quarter. Let me now take you through our outlook and plans for the balance of the year, fiscal year 2014. Okay, we are maintaining our guidance of growing sales, low teens, and growing absolute EBIT to around mid-teens, or between 11.5 to 12 billion pesos. Okay, the plans and outlook for the remaining months of the fiscal year are as follows. One, we expect total branded foods to maintain double-digit sales growth, though we see potential margin pressures as currencies continue to devaluate against the dollar and selective increases in soft commodity prices will be experienced. We expect to offset these through pricing actions in the near term. Second, we will begin commissioning our coffee and creamer factory in Vietnam in February and May respectively to augment capacity for the Philippines. We also expect to start commissioning our bioethanol facility by June. Third, we will finish construction of our Central Vietnam factory. This is located in Quang Ngai with snack food and beverage lines, which we think will give us efficiencies in freight and handling as we closely distribute the products nearer the market. With our investment license also approved in Myanmar, we are now in the process of finalizing the contract with the supplier for the construction of the manufacturing facility in Yangon. Four, we will install additional capacities in the Philippines to include PET beverage and chocolate line, basically on NIPS, and on our international business, to support our strategic new product launches. For example, we have launched RTD coffee in Vietnam. Okay, fifth, we will finalize our discussion of our joint venture partnership with Calbee of Japan. Both parties aim to have a definitive agreement by the second quarter of calendar year 2014. Sixth, the other businesses, commodities and agro-industrial will remain profitable. We expect sugar and flour to register the same level of absolute EBIT compared to our fiscal year 2013, while our agro-industrial business will continue to generate positive income for the company. Then seventh is that our board declared a dividend of 3 pesos per share last February 6, which is a 25% increase versus the 2 pesos and 40 centavos we paid out last year. This is again equivalent to 65% of our previous year's reported income. Okay, we are now ready to answer questions. I'm actually with Mr. Lance Bohongwei and our Managing Director for Branded Foods, Mr. Nilo Mapa.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on the telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the pound or hash key. Your first question comes from the line of Karim Salamashin from Credit Suisse. Please ask your question.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. I've got a couple of questions. I guess first it's obviously on the Branded Consumer Foods Group Philippines margins. You know, the margins were very strong in the quarter. But I'm interested, you know, if we look quarter over quarter, so sequentially the margins improved 190 basis points. So what really changed in the first quarter to lead to that? And then also, you know, going forward for the remaining three quarters of this year, how much of that 190 basis points is structural, like a structural change in either your cost structure or the top line, or is it temporary and we're going to see some of that margin be given back?
I think basically if you look at it, I think the expansion operating margins is driven by two things. No, first was the we saw a expansion in gross margins on the Philippine side. I think this is a function of really just stronger sales on the snack end, where we enjoy higher margins. We saw near 20% sales growth across our snack business. And second was really the very rapid sales growth, which was much faster than the expansion in other fixed operating expenses. Thus, you saw the widening in operating margins in the Philippine part of the business. Overall, we think that this operating margin level should be sustainable at least for in the next few quarters.
Sorry, just on that last comment, so you think a 15.5% EBIT margin is sustainable for two or three quarters of this fiscal year? Is that right?
Yes.
And then, so doesn't that imply that your EBIT growth guidance of mid-teens is much too low?
I think we'll get back to you after the second quarter on whether there's any change in EBIT guidance.
Okay, fair enough. And then
two more months under our belt.
Okay, are you seeing in the current quarter? I know we're only about a month and a half into it. Are you seeing any fundamentally different top line trends in the current quarter that might change that, or are we still seeing the same top line trends?
Generally, the growth is still quite strong. I think we're competing more with larger bases last year, no? But the overall the growth is still I don't think it'll be quite 28%, but it's still significantly above our original expectations.
Okay. On your balance sheet, you know, Lance, I think I asked you the same question 3 months ago. About the cash in your balance sheet. So here you are, you finished the quarter with $16 billion of cash, and I appreciate that you guys increased your dividend, so about $6.6 billion or so has to go to pay down that dividend. But, you know, your expanded CapEx program for this year should be funded by operating cash flow. So you have, let's call it, $9 billion left over. What are you going to do with that?
Well, we still do have some debt on the balance sheet, no? And I think generally in terms of priority, our three priorities remain the same. One is to continue to fund our growth through capital expenditures. Second is to distribute at least 50% of our earnings as dividends to our shareholders. And the third is to keep powder dry to pursue possible M&A or joint ventures or acquisitions. I think the situation remains the same. I think we probably closer to the end of the year we'll have to we'll have a review on how much on what to do with the we don't want to have, of course, any excess funds on the balance sheet, so we will look at what dividends to pay at that point.
Okay, fair enough. And sorry, one more question. If you look at, you know, Vietnam, you talked about weather and maybe some slightly lower demand trends. Is any of that, was there any material change in market share trends that you noticed in Vietnam in the quarter?
Maybe I'll ask Milo to speak a little bit about that. But the big picture, from what I'm aware of, is that it was unusually rainy in Japan this last quarter.
Yeah. Well, to answer your question, as far as market shares is concerned, we have actually maintained, if not slightly, marginally improved our market share. So it was really the entire RTD segment that had declined. But several things there. First of all is that when we ended the year, it seemed that the trade was a little more bullish than they were, they actually overstocked coming into the month of October. So we saw some inventory correction for the month of October, so much so that there was actually some disruption in pricing because they were overstocked for October and November. We actually saw a lot of people driving down their prices. And these things usually create a lot of disruption in the market and volatility. So there were two things. First, it was overstocking levels that create some speculation in the market and price instability. And yes, it was a little wetter and colder in Vietnam. As you know, right after the Haiyan typhoon here in the Philippines, that immediately progressed to Vietnam, and there were several other cold spells coming into northern Vietnam, where we were mostly affected.
Okay. The challenge, I guess one thing to add, the challenge with overstocking situations in really any market is that they can often persist, and there's not a lot of transparency necessarily into the channel.
Correct.
So this overstocking situation, how long do you think it's going to persist?
No, we've seen, but in our base, when we look at the overstocking situation, the best indication is that what is the list prices right now being given by our wholesalers to the trade.
Sure.
And
yeah,
we've seen it already normalized by as early as December. So we expect to recover this quarter.
Okay, terrific. Thank you very much. I'll let somebody else have a turn.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Taiba Al-Kazami from Asia Investments. Please go ahead.
Hi, it's actually Mohammed. I'm with Taiba. I had a few questions. One is for Nilo. What remains the key challenge in the next year or two that you hope to overcome to really grow the business? And you know, a follow-up to that would be, how is the AEC integration affecting your business, and how are you planning for it?
I think the biggest challenge right now is to be able to, well, first of all, the business conditions in Southeast Asia, specifically in Vietnam, specifically in Indonesia, and to a certain extent, Vietnam is becoming a little more challenging. So we need to be able to build momentum, sustain the momentum that we've had in Vietnam, and that is building more lines and more legs for growth in Vietnam to be able to sustain that. Indonesia continues to be a challenge where our equity has not yet been established, and we see a lot of opportunities for improvement as far as our sales execution is concerned. So what keeps me truly occupied is to be able to maintain the sales momentum in Vietnam and Thailand, and of course in Indonesia. And as you know, there have been significant economic shifts in Indonesia and political instability in Thailand, where we don't know how that will pan out. So there is a lot of uncertainty. And of course, the pressure to be able to sustain that business growth over there. Admittedly, the Philippines also, where if the Philippines has been churning out growth rates, robust growth rates in excess of 20%, the expectations also increase. And we are quite happy and encouraged this quarter that we are seeing growth rates across many categories. We are not so dependent right now on RTD beverage. So yes, I am also sort of pressured to be able to sustain the momentum across many categories in the Philippines.
And how are you adjusting those, I mean, specifically in terms of planning for you know, making sure the business is growing? Just, you know, curious to hear your thoughts.
Well, first of all, as far as the bottom line is concerned, we still do see a lot of opportunity to improve on cost, especially as you had mentioned on AEC. We are currently studying right now what is the most optimal product sourcing strategy, and that is in the process of integration right now. Secondly, really building within our existing categories, building our portfolio, and as Mike had mentioned, one of the options is to pursue strategic partnerships like what we are pursuing right now and hope to conclude with Calvi.
Can you touch on that a little bit? Can you give us some visibility in terms of
Unfortunately, at this point in time, we cannot say much more until such time that we are able to have our definitive agreement, to conclude the definitive agreement.
I had just another question. I saw there was a slight decline in the packaging for the Philippines. I know it's a small portion of the business, but is that in any way indicating some slower growth domestically?
No, the packaging business reflected here is the sales of BOPP, which is not used by URC, no? So that's more reflective of the external environment for that specific type of packaging, and that one is facing a lot of margin competition, particularly from China and Indonesia. We have a separate flexible packaging division within URC domestic, and I think that is doing very well. Tonnage there is up very, very much, and that is also benefiting URC in terms of expanded gross and operating margin. So what's reflected in the packaging in the P&L is really external sales of BOPP films. No? We have a separate packaging business within the business which makes flexible packaging.
Understood. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Matthew Tan from Wealth Securities. Please ask your question.
Hi, good afternoon. I'd just like to ask, in your first quarter results, was there any effect, or like maybe like it was a one-off from Yolanda buying? Or do you think, or are you seeing a sustained momentum in like the current quarter, like in the maybe first, like January, and then the first few weeks of February?
URC as a whole does not really benefit from Yolanda buying, because the only product we make that benefit from Yolanda is water and noodles. Pouch noodles, which our capacity itself is not. It's not significant relative to the total market. No? So, in fact, I would say the Yolanda itself is probably negative for us, because it affects demand in the Visayas area.
I see. Also, on the Calbi venture, we're just concerned that maybe, don't you think, like maybe the product would cannibalize on their current offerings? Like maybe it would compete with their current portfolio of products?
Mm.
We would not pursue this joint venture if we thought that there was no innovation or value added in terms of product execution. So this is clearly a very distinct and differentiated product that is not currently available in the Philippines.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from the line of Ong Kong V from LBCA Capital. Please ask your question.
Hi, thanks for hosting the call. You mentioned that you expect EBIT margins to remain at current level for the next one or two quarters. Are there key input prices that have stayed low or trended lower that resulted in the higher margin?
Well, I think the surprise on the upside is dairy product has really gone up in price. Are you seeing some strength now on palm oil a little bit? But what has really been very, very manageable has been Robusta coffee, no, which is significantly below last year, albeit there's been some slight increases over the last few weeks, no? But it's still significantly lower than where it was last year, probably maybe 10%, 10 to 15% cheaper than last year. And that's a very significant raw material for us.
How about sugar and cocoa?
Cocoa is a little bit lower than last year for us.
Cocoa butter.
Because we're primarily a cocoa powder user, not a cocoa butter. Sugar, is the whole sugar prices are a little bit, the first quarter a little bit higher than the first quarter last year, but we expect that the next, the balance 3 quarters, you'll probably see raw and refined sugar prices dip a little bit in the Philippines.
Okay, and regarding Philippines branded consumer growth, I might have missed some of it just now. You mentioned that what contributed to the strong sales growth was coffee, which was up 60%, and C2 was up, was it 30%?
No, it's up in teens, the teens levels.
Oh, the teens level, okay. And how about the snack foods? Were there any snack foods that categories?
Yeah, most of the snack food categories grew between 15 to 20%. Whether they be biscuits, confectionery, or snacks.
Could I, however, point out that during the same period last year, we were experiencing some logistical constraints towards Visayas and Mindanao last year. We did also experience some of it this year, but not to the extent that we were experiencing last year. So our growth rates were sort of helped by that.
Okay, and regarding the international market for Indonesia, what was the reason to remove production of C2?
It was not a profitable business.
Okay. Alright, that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Sridhar Nishtala from T. Rao Price. Please ask your question.
Yeah, hi Lance. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Thank you very much for doing this call. So I had a few questions. First, maybe we can start from the international business. So obviously, there's been a slowdown this quarter if I compare with growth rates in the previous quarter. Now, there's some puts and takes in different markets which you mentioned, but looking holistically, are there any concerns that you have in terms of growth rates that you can achieve in these markets? And is there a time, do you think, where these markets can actually grow ahead of the Philippines market, which used to be the case till about 2 years back, you know?
I think in the medium term, we should expect that since we're working off smaller bases, we do expect our international business, as we said, to grow, 13-15%, maybe Philippines to grow 10%. But I guess the opposite thing has happened for the last few quarters, and it seems that the Philippines continues to have very strong momentum. I think the key job at this point is really to bring international business back. I think the slow sales growth is really reflective of a very strange quarter in Vietnam, where actually for the first time in many years we saw from Nielsen that the beverage market was actually shrinking, no, for that quarter. And we're also seeing rather low single-digit growth in most markets in Thailand. We are, however, a little bit surprised by our own Thai business, which is growing, we think, a little bit faster than the market, and the trend seems to be holding up this quarter. I think the key is really bringing Vietnamese growth back to the double digits that we expect. We have a range of new products that are coming out. We're executing better, I think, on the snack and biscuit side. And we think if tea growth comes back to historic levels, then we should see a return to double digit growth for international.
Okay. And in Indonesia, if you excluded C2, are the rest of the businesses, I mean, the rest of your portfolio, chips, etc., are the growth rates sustaining?
Yeah, we're still growing about 15 to 20% without C2.
Yeah.
If you take out the effects, the loss of the C2 volumes, we would be growing snacks about 20%, right?
Yeah. Okay. And then for the international business on the margin side, so they last year were about 9.5%. First quarter, it's up on a YOY basis. I'm assuming most of that is because of gross profit margin improvement, yeah? Now, medium term, where do you think margins for the international business can get to? Because obviously there are markets which are more profitable and there are markets which are less profitable. But say on a 3-year view or 5-year view, do you think margins can get to the low double digit or mid-teens kind of range internationally?
Last year we were about 9.5. This year we're starting a little bit above 10. Honestly, I don't expect much margin expansion this year because we are seeing some weakening currencies in many markets where the ability to raise prices has really been challenged. And I would say Thailand and Indonesia in particular, we're seeing some challenges in terms of margins, no? Vietnam seems to be holding up because the ability to raise prices there seems to be a little bit more manageable. I think we're not anticipating, at least for the next year and a half, to see a dramatic improvement in margins internationally as we are seeing in the Philippines. I think that margin expansion will only happen when we return to double-digit revenue growth.
So on an overall basis, international has to grow at double digits for you to start getting benefits on the margin side, yeah?
I think that's generally true, and I think Vietnam has to return to growth as it's our highest margin, highest operating margin business.
Right. Okay, so, and one, you know, top-down question which I had, is on slide 6, you know, where you mentioned for the BCF, the last couple of bullets, you know, where you reorganize the group to be headed by one managing director who's on the call, I believe. And the second one is the initiatives on regional alignment and operations, etc. Can you take us through the significance of these two steps? And when, particularly on the second one, I mean, this, we've discussed this over the last year or 18 months. What sort of upside do you think this alone can bring to your margin profile once you start running the whole consumer business as one business?
Maybe I should let the guy running the business.
I wish my boss could have answered that question. But honestly, we are still in the process of trying to integrate both the Philippine operations and the international operations. As a matter of fact, it's only today that we're announcing some parts of the reorganization. We're in critical functions, including procurement, supply chain, human resources, and are currently being integrated where we are trying to seek out the synergy. Do we have a quantification just yet? No, unfortunately. We're starting on that process, and it would have to take months even for us to determine the full potential of such an integration.
But if you had to highlight the key areas where you think you can get the maximum synergies by combining these two operations, could you highlight some of those key areas where you could get improvement?
I think the biggest synergies will come, it's really a lot of it are soft, not unquantifiable. It's really, for instance, by having a single talent pool across the whole region, it's enabling, our more experienced managers, particularly in the Philippines, to execute, particularly on sales, for instance, in Indonesia, where we can send, there's more visibility with single leadership across to say, these are the gaps, and I will send two or three of my best management over to Indonesia for 6 months and 1 year to resolve certain opportunities we see. It comes in terms of innovation where there's more, more opportunities to cut across and communicate and use common, ads or success stories across the region. The real savings, I think, will potentially probably the dollars and cents, I think, will come from asset utilization and procurement across the region. I think we have done a lot of that in the past, but I think we're seeing that there's still even more opportunities for that as we now have a single regional supply chain manager and a single regional procurement manager, and we are now going to be doing our production planning and our purchasing across the region rather than by Philippines and by international. No? So I think it will take it probably takes 6 months to 18 months to begin to see the benefits of that. But I think the benefits will really come from better asset utilization and probably some procurement improvements.
Okay. So on that last point, in asset utilization, my understanding was that in Philippines you've had to build for redundancy in the past, and that you could actually, you know, and it's a high cost, manufacturing base compared to some of the markets that you're present in. Is it easy or difficult to get that manufacturing, for example, to shift to one location which is the cheapest in all the markets? Or do you think you will have some amount of redundancy in Philippines always, given that it's your largest market?
I think we generally take our redundancy cost against operating earnings, no? So we've been becoming more efficient without calling for any special one-off costs. I do think that there are certain products which are more likely to be produced regionally, to cite a case, something like coffee or creamer, whereas certain products like snacks are generally better produced in-country because the logistics cost of transporting and exporting such are extremely high. No? And I would say the Philippines indeed is a high-cost country in many ways, but because of the huge increases in labor costs, particularly in Indonesia and Thailand, I think its cost disadvantage vis-a-vis the other markets is probably decreasing.
And one sort of housekeeping question I had was just on tax rates in the fourth quarter of last year and the first quarter of this year are much above prior periods. What the guidance on tax rates?
I think we should expect 15% to 18%. I think a lot of some of our income tax holidays, particularly for beverage, are beginning to melt away.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Teba Al-Kazami from Asia Investments. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Teba on the line. I wanted to elaborate further on the reorganization. I wanted to know if the R&D team is going to be under Carnivio.
We're trying to forge synergies right now. R&D, we have a single person trying to oversee R&D initiatives across, coordinating and finding synergies across R&D across all countries. But, you know, even in the past, each of these countries independently worked together with the Philippines and among themselves. We're just trying to improve the work process right now and the transfer of technology and know-how.
We're going to still keep in-country R&D teams, particularly for application. No?
Yeah, yeah.
But who is the person that's going to be in charge of R&D?
We have a head of manufacturing and technology. His name is David Lin. So he oversees both product and process technology, and he oversees that. He was concurrently announced along with my appointment.
Okay. And how many products do you expect to launch this year? New products?
I think it's fair to say we have about 400 SKUs, at least in the Philippines, and we tend to replace 15 to 20% of the SKUs every year.
Okay. I guess... for Carnelia, what line of business are you most excited about with the new restructuring?
That's like asking someone who his favorite son is. I have to say that, or daughter for that matter. I'm rather quite excited about all the challenges and I truly am quite excited about both the challenges and the opportunities that we face.
And then my last question would be, going forward, do you expect further reorganization in the company?
Not in any significant fashion.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced.
Well, I think that ends our presentation for the most recent first quarter of URG. We hope to hear from you again and present in a few months. Thank you very much.